Welcome to the Leader's Notebook with Dr. Mark Rutland. Dr. Rutland is a world-renowned leadership expert. He is a New York Times best-selling author, and he has served as the president of two universities. The Leader's Notebook is brought to you by Global Servants. For more information about Global Servants, please visit our website, globalservants.org. Here is your host, Dr. Mark Rutland.
Hello, I'm Mark Rutland. Welcome to the Leader's Notebook. This is the third in a series of very unusual episodes of the Leader's Notebook, probably more different than anything I've ever recorded for this podcast, and I hope you're enjoying it. It's called Keep On Keeping On, How to Die Young as Old as Possible. The series is based on my brand new book by the same title. I hope that you will enjoy this series on the podcast, and I hope that you'll also get and enjoy the book. It's available now through our website, drmarkrutland.com. And by the way, let me mention that. If you haven't downloaded the app, it's free. Make sure that you do that. Go wherever you get apps and get the Dr. Mark Rutland app. It's free. I want to give you this special invitation, though. On November the 18th at 7 p.m. at Mount Perrin Church of God Central in Atlanta, November the 18th at 7 p.m. will be the national premiere for this book, and you're invited to attend. It's going to be a great night. We'll have lots of fun, some giveaways and door prizes. There'll be some great music by Stan Whitmire and Mark Blankenship. Now, who should attend? It's an exclusive event that we're calling for mature audiences only. That doesn't mean senior citizens. It means mature audiences only. If you've never seen a hula hoop, if you have no idea what a slinky is, and if you're not 100% convinced that Elvis Presley was greater than Taylor Swift, you may not know what's going on, but you're invited. We want to see you there. This is the national premiere, and you're going to love it. It's going to be a great night. November the 18th, Mount Perrin Church of God Central at 7 p.m. Keep on keeping on. How to Die Young as Old as Possible. Now, this new book is a book about aging gracefully. It's a funny book. In fact, I wrote it just to be funny. I wanted to just make people laugh. We live in such a serious world all the time. Everything's so serious, and nobody sees life for what it is, and they're not willing to laugh and to laugh at themselves. One of the chapters in the book is about memories, and I hope that this chapter will be useful. As we age, memory becomes more and more, the whole issue of memory becomes more and more complicated. I want to just share with you some thoughts on memories as we continue this series on Keep On Keeping On, How to Die Young as Old as Possible, my brand new 20th book. I hope you'll get it. There's an anonymous saying that says, not only is my short-term memory horrible, but so is my short-term memory. I love that. I wish I had thought of it, but somebody very clever thought of it. Memories are a mixture of what actually happened, how we remember what happened, and how we edit the narrative of that memory over the course of a lifetime. When we speak of the things we treasure, it's usually because of the memories that are attached to those things. The fact that one's grandmother wore a brooch to her wedding does not really make it more valuable in any objective sense, of course. Unless, of course, I guess your grandmother happens to be Mata Hari. For most of us, however, life is not an episode of Antiques Roadshow. The provenance, a favorite word on that venerable show, attached to most of our grandmothers is much more pedestrian than if she were Mata Hari. Yet it is precisely that connection, the connection to our grandmother, that makes something more precious to us. In many cases, perhaps in most cases, it is some memory that dictates the value of something we own. That's the reason things we treasure change with time. We don't treasure the same things exactly in older age as we did when we were young. One of my earliest and most prized and most memory-laden possessions is now nothing but a memory, because it's no more, it's gone. It was a little handmade bow and arrow, still mourned, but long gone. It did not even last one full summer. I received it as a gift the week school ended one summer, and it was broken beyond hope of repair before school reopened in the fall. Yet now, I treasure the memory of that little handcrafted toy solely because my pappy, my great-grandfather, whom I loved, of whom I was extremely fond, he made it. He did not buy it. He made it with his gnarled old blacksmith's hands. I talked to my sister about the little bow and arrow one time, and she remembered Pappy making them for all of us, and she remembered hers. Now I'm approaching the age he was when he made the bow and arrow, and oddly enough, I still wish I had that little bow and arrow. I remember how it made me feel. I was transformed by it. My imagination was inflamed. I became the feared Comanche war chief, Quanah Parker. The China berry tree in Pappy's front yard was Palo Duro Canyon, and I dared the white eyes to come and meet their death. Beyond the murderous games of make-believe, more important than the mass destruction I wreaked upon the dreaded Texas Rangers and the Bluecoats, the more important reality of that little bow and arrow was that my Pappy made it for me. How grieved I was when that little bow broke and the last arrow was finally lost in the weeds somewhere. It was my first true disillusionment, the manifest witness of the frailty and temporariness of things. Now I ask myself this, is there anything I now own which I now love as I loved that little handmade bow and arrow? Actually, I think not. I have more possessions, to be sure, and far more expensive ones, but none of them have the magical power to turn me into a dangerous Comanche war chief. Until recently, I owned an antique car, a beautiful black 1929 Oldsmobile with an eye-popping red interior and a gorgeous authentic hood ornament, a gleaming chrome lark. I enjoyed that gangster car, as my wife called it. But as beautiful as it was, it lacked the magic to turn me into Clyde Barrow. When it came time to let that beloved car go, I actually grieved a bit, but not as I did so long ago over my Pappy's bow and arrow. In fact, I've now replaced the Olds with another antique, a 1933 Plymouth, but I have never replaced Pappy's bow and arrow. It's not just that my toys have changed. I have changed. If I had that little bow and arrow right now, I wouldn't run screaming around our neatly manicured suburban subdivision, terrorizing the neighbors and seeking scalps to hang on my lodge pole. I never stood on the running board of my classic Olds, clutching a toy machine gun while my wife, dressed like Bonnie Parker, drove madly away from pretended bank robberies. I drove the Olds. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the looks it got, the friendly waves, and the thumbs up from strangers. I even attended the occasional car show. But it was a toy, an old man's toy, because old men do not play as boys play. I enjoyed the car, but I treasure the memory of Pappy's homemade bow and arrow. Where a man's treasure is, there his heart will be also. It's not that that fragile little bow and arrow was just a treasure, it's that it connected to my Pappy. It's long gone. It is the memory of my dear Pappy's big hands whittling it on his front porch. The Oldsmobile was fun. The classic 33 Plymouth I own now is fun. I enjoy it. But my childhood bow and arrow, now that was a treasure. Memories, even the bad ones, are the only treasures that we gain simply by staying alive. The wealthy do not gain more than the poor, nor the righteous more than the loathsome. We earn memories with years. We pay for them with time. We treasure the good ones more the longer we own them. The strangest kind of memories are those which others remember for us. I actually remember when my father came home from the Korean War. While he was fighting in Korea, my mother moved us into a tiny rent house in Commerce, Texas, the town where my father and all four of us kids had been born. My mother was from nearby Randolph, another even smaller town, a tiny village, to be more exact. The landlord of that little rent house was Johnny Jones, who lived in an almost identical house next door and drove a water wagon delivering to farms and businesses. He owned a solitary cow, which I can remember learning to milk. I treasure this memory because neither of my older siblings would even try. I felt very big for having accomplished this incredible feat. I actually remember all this. At least, I think I do. What I cannot remember is my father leaving for the war. I cannot remember one particular event which my mother told me and many others so many times in such detail that now it's one of those almost memories, which are not really memories at all. I cannot remember standing at the curb at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, saluting the columns of soldiers as they rolled out. I cannot remember saluting them for hours in the hot Oklahoma sun, nor how they would return the salute. I cannot remember my mother dragging me in for lunch or how I cried because it meant some would leave without my salute. I cannot remember, actually remember, any of that. But I have borrowed it from my mother's memories. I'll now look at yellowing photos of me, then, of that little boy, whom she told me was me, and I wonder, what could that boy have been thinking? Why did he feel so compelled to salute the troops heading off to war? I wish I could talk to him, to me, to that little boy who once was me. I wish I could ask him many things. But he is no more, and I have no memory of him except borrowed ones. Memory is at least a two-part process. When something happens, my brain, such as it is, records it, files it, if you will, and labels it, so I can find it if I should ever need or want it. Our brain's storage units, whatever they look like, must be limited. Surely they are. Can there possibly be room in my intellectual filing cabinet to record everything? I mean, everything? I don't think so. As I say, I'm not a psychologist or a neuroscientist, but I believe that we have some kind of built-in filter that sorts through the constant deluge of sights and sounds and smells and words that pour into our brains through the portals of our senses. We have some mechanism, some filter that deletes most of it. There must be some autofilter, a switch, if you will, somehow that decides without our interference, delete, do not store this memory. Why? Because it's too similar to a million like it. Perhaps the would-be memory is just too stupid to retain. Just some political speech I heard sometime. For example, for whatever reason, what might have been recorded and filed as a memory simply disappears. Why do some people's memories seem to work so much better than others? Why do our memories seem to work less well as we age? These are questions that we have to deal with, but the bottom line is memories are precious. Maybe some of our internal computers simply begin to not work as well as we get older. I remember how the best stories start. They begin with, I remember. It's how the best evenings start. Here's a word for the younger readers of this book, should there be any. Wise young folks mine the golden memories of their elders. They dig them out from the crevices where they have lain buried for long. Be a miner. Sit with your grandparents. Ask them to tell you how it was when they were young and the world was new. What was life like? What about love? Did people even fall in love way back then? Beg to be told the bad stuff, the scary stuff, and the funny stuff. Plead with them. Tell me how it was. Let me in on your memories. Before she died, I did exactly that with my 98-year-old mother. My wife and I sat with her for hours and listened to her memories. They poured out. I'd heard some of them, many perhaps, at one time or another, but not like a river flowing out from deep inside the old woman whom I called mother. She recalled her impoverished childhood as the firstborn daughter of a hopeless alcoholic. She told us of picking cotton as a child in the blazing East Texas cotton fields, and of being the poorest girl in the school. I was moved by her memories of early married life, especially waiting for my dad to come home from two wars. What came through the clearest was her passionate love for her nation and her state, our state, Texas, of course, and her contempt, her utter disdain for unpatriotic modern progressives. She would pause every now and again and say, "Whatever happened to this country?" One thing that makes so many of us so crotchety as we get older is that nothing looks the same. Our memories of how life was take on an artificial radiance, and in that golden glow, how life actually is looks dreary and threatening by comparison. As we get older, we find ourselves in an alien culture. The music makes no sense. The clothes look, well, wrong. And when we were young, only pirates had tattoos. I refuse to become that mean old guy spending my last days chasing kids off my lawn. I try not to over-glorify the past. I adored my pappy. I loved staying at his old house in Randolph, Texas, and I love the memory of my bow and arrow. But this is now, this is today, and I intend to live with joy. I hope you've enjoyed this series on Keep On Keeping On, How to Die Young as Old as Possible. And I hope you'll get that book. It's available right now. You can go to our website, drmarkrutland.com website. I hope you'll enjoy it. I hope you'll buy it for your friends. It'll be a great, great Christmas present. And let me close with this. Memories are sweet and wonderful. But right now, you're still alive. Live with joy, unspeakable and full of glory. Treasure your memories, but don't idolize them. Live today with joy and die young, as old as possible. God bless you. This is Mark Rutland, and this has been the Leader's Notebook. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this little excerpt and some commentary on my newest book, Keep On Keeping On, How to Die Young as Old as Possible. Now, just before we wrap up the Leader's Notebook for today, I want to remind you that you're invited to the national book premiere of this funny, charming book. I just know you're going to love it, at Mount Perrin Church of God Central, November the 18th, 7 p.m. We're going to have a blast. See you then. God bless you. Keep on keeping on.
You've been listening to The Leader's Notebook with Dr. Mark Rutland. You can follow Dr. Rutland on X at Dr. Mark Rutland or visit his website, drmarkrutland.com, where you can find information about his materials and his app. Join us next week for another episode of The Leader's Notebook.